Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Oh, thanks
at this
for being
dump.
Here. Yeah, sure. Yeah. You like what I've done to with it for you?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I was actually
taking you years.
Yeah. Well, I'm
years in the making.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to make any sudden moves here. I actually was retaping some of the Christmas lights. You know, they're held on by black Gorilla tape, and occasionally it'll start to get a little droopy. But I'll come in and retape just this area that we're in.
Sure, the Klempire appreciates that.
Yeah. Well, we all got to pitch in.
You know,
it's a community effort.
So what's going on, man? Except the heat, man. The heat has just been unbearable.
Heat. It's hot right when you walk out of your house in the morning.
Oh God!
If you stay up till 5 a.m., you may see like a 79 degree reading on the phone.
The wife and I aren't even getting under the covers.
We're just
over the covers.
Wow, no sheet or anything?
Nothing. We're just over the covers in our underwear.
Wow. But you have air conditioning, right?
We have air conditioning, yeah. But
you have a modern house. A house that's insulated anyway.
And well, it's an old house, so there's cracks in the floors, you know, so it's just been brutal. Man, it's just so brutal, and you know, it's been so brutal with the heat. I'm actually changing my underwear twice a day.
Huh? Okay.
I just sweat. In fact,
was it twice a week before
twice.
You know,
yeah, there you go.
It was once a week sometimes.
Whether you needed it or not.
Yeah. Exactly. but I mean, in fact, just like yesterday, I was walking from my job, my office, to my car, which is about a 7-minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got to my car, I was just drenched.
Yeah.
I was just
drenched.
Sweaty.
Did you change your underwear on the walk during that 7 minutes?
I would have liked to.
Just drop trowel?
I would have just liked to just taken it all off.
Okay. I've just moved into a place that has a swimming pool, so I've been I have some remedies. I have some remedies.
But so what's going on tomorrow with you? Can we drop by?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, come on by. Well, yeah.
There's always
maybe. Saturday would be ideal.
I got a date on Saturday.
Okay.
Oh, right on. You and your lady going to get under the sheets? Is that how you're going to mix it up?
No.
Okay.
My mistress.
Oh, okay.
She's coming over. Okay.
No, she's not coming over. She's going to meet me at the men's fitting room at the mall.
Oh.
That's where we usually hook up. That's where we usually hook.
All right.
But anyway, it's just been brutal, man.
Yep.
But somebody told me, someone at the university on campus said that this heat that we have, I don't know how he made sense, but he didn't really make, this heat that we're having is going to keep the hurricanes away from New Orleans.
Okay.
This is what he said. And I was like,
oh, all right. Well, this one killer hurricane that's coming across Beryl. Yeah, it's a Category 4, it seems to be dying down, but sure.
Yeah,
is,
it's not going to hit us, unless it takes a severe right.
So we're
turn.
Just going to get heat stroke, we're not going to drown, is
right.
what
well,
he's saying.
Well, I guess, but he made some point, which I don't remember, because he was rambling
right,
on
something
about
something about
it.
The wind shear and the high
he just says
pressure
heat
and
will
keep
ward
it off.
But there's
the
Nino and the Nina out there.
Right. What does this guy do, the guy that
he's
told you?
He's a janitor.
Okay, there we go. I was going to say, all right, there we go.
Yeah, he's a janitor, but he seems very well. He's been around, as they say.
Yeah, he's been a janitor for a while.
Yeah. So
John Bell Edwards, our former governor, and he's sleeping on the quad. It's like, no, this is what you want.
Yeah. So we are here. It's July 3rd, and the big weekend's coming up, the 4th of July weekend.
Right.
And we have Essence Fest.
Yep.
The annual Essence Fest. This is down here. And every year I hear it's going to move, but it never does.
What, Essence Fest?
Yeah, they're going to go to Atlanta or Coney Island or somewhere like that. But it always stays down here because it's easier to kill people down here.
Well, you know? I don't know.
They're down here again, and the same acts are here every year.
No, it's not. They mix it up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who do they have this year?
I'm not too sure.
Have you ever... Frankie Mays? Well, he's here every year. And he's every year he says this is the last year.
He did skip a couple of years. There was a couple of years. Have you ever been to Essence?
No, I wouldn't. No, I know. No. I don't like to. I don't really care for music too much.
Oh, you didn't?
I don't go to Jazz Fest. I don't do any of that stuff.
I call Essence Fest Jazz Fest for smart people.
Oh,
what I call it.
Oh, really?
Well, Well, because it's in the air conditioning.
It's in the air conditioning. Exactly.
It's out of the sunshine.
They're like, hey, yeah. Do you want to go watch Dave Matthews in a vacant lot? It's 103 degrees. Or do you want to go watch the Commodores in the air conditioning?
Sure.
So yeah, I'm a big fan of Essence Festival.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay. Nice.
Huge fan. All right.
Well, you know, tomorrow, 4th of July, I think it starts tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, the new law that says you can carry a gun concealed goes into effect.
Right, no permit.
Right, without a permit, you could be in the French Quarter tomorrow.
I'm packing right now.
Are you really? No. Well, you have a permit, don't you?
No.
You don't?
No. I don't have a permit to carry a gun. No.
Oh, you just have a permit to have a gun.
Well, I mean, you don't even need a permit to buy a gun in Louisiana.
Oh,
you need a driver's license.
Stupid.
I don't even
need
just ID, man. Yeah.
Oh, God, really?
So that goes into effect tomorrow.
Yeah, so
tomorrow.
And Essence Fest starts tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh, so we're going to see a lot of murder tomorrow.
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's not the Essence Fest people, but you know, any time you have tourists in town, the local criminals are on the lookout. Like they shot that girl out in she was getting into her car in the French Quarter.
Yeah, she was a tour guide. Yeah.
Terrible. Just trying to rob her. You know, at first I thought, oh, it's some kind of targeted hitch. They just walked up to her and shot her. Turns out, no, they were trying to rob her, and I don't know. You know, it's criminals. They don't know what they're not professionals. They don't know what they're doing. They get nervous, and then somebody winds up getting killed.
No, they're really bad at it. The Essence Fest crowd, though, yeah, I think that they're like nice bougie folks that come down here and want to have a good time and spend cash. And then, like, I think with Renee said, I think it's like local clowns that mess it up.
And there's a horrible combination because you've got the heat.
Yep.
And alcohol and way too many people in a very small space.
I thought you were going to say heat, alcohol, and Frankie, Beverly, and Maze.
No, Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson's great.
Yeah, is she?
Oh, she's great.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She's so skilled. You don't like music, though.
I never really cared for her, but yeah, the age I'm at, I really don't care to see music, especially live music. It's just so loud.
Well, we've been having a lot of news outside of New Orleans recently.
Yeah?
Like last week, we recorded the show on Thursday.
Yeah.
While we were recording this show, Joe Biden and Donald Trump were doing their debate.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, like, all that news that happened, we were unaware of it. And after the podcast, I went and watched the replay, and it was shocking. Did you see any of that, man?
No, I just got some of the stuff from my wife and
stuff like that.
So, what do I care?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
my life's not going to change one bit.
Well,
you know?
I just think... It's for the chattering class, though.
Yeah.
It's big news, and everybody wants to weigh
Biden fell asleep. Basically, what I heard was Biden was, like, not well, and Trump was just lying, as always. This is what the pundits, I heard from all the pundits.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Liar and sleeper. You know, I think he should drop out. I think he should.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, though. That's all indications are he has no inclination to.
Well, he has no idea what's going on. He has no inclination of anything.
Well,
he's like, what? Breakfast? It's 8 o'clock in the morning. What do you mean breakfast?
What was your takeaway, Renee, from watching it?
Well, you know, it's disturbing, but you know, both of these guys are decrepit. So you know, it's like if I had to pick one, I'd still vote for Biden. You know, there's no choice in the matter. Not that here in Louisiana it makes this as an academic exercise, because Louisiana is probably going to go for Trump. You know, 70% or something like that. It'll be New Orleans will be 100% for Biden. Well, I don't know, but it's my vote is not really an important one, but I don't see. Oh, it'll be interesting the next 6 months, whatever this is.
Well, we can only hope that they both die.
That would shake things up.
If there's any people out there who agree with me, you know, honk your horn. Right,
time
now
to make a move.
it's deafening outside right now.
I got home and my wife was angry. She was upset, you know, and I was like, well, who died? You know, that kind of stuff. And she basically said the Biden pretty much died on stage. And then I heard that he had to be walked. He couldn't find his way off from the podium. His wife had to come out there and say, there's a step.
Lead him off.
There's a step. Oh, watch out. That's a step, you know. And so Anyway, the poor guy, you know, he's old. We're all going to be like that one day.
Yeah, we're getting there closer.
I'm getting there like within the next few weeks, I think.
You think so?
Oh, could be. I don't know.
It's a steep decline.
I don't like stairs.
No, stay healthy until the next mayoral race. Manny.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, I'll try.
Please.
But wouldn't it be funny to run as mayor as a guy who didn't know what the hell was going on?
It would be actually. Oh my God, if you did that as a character?
Yeah.
Oh my Lord.
That's not so far off from your usual approach, actually. Just without the decrepitude.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, speaking of this weekend, you know, this holiday weekend we're having, to recap, remember last week we talked about. Joey Chestnut.
Yes.
The hot dog eating champion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's been barred.
Right. He's
from
not gonna be
tomorrow's hot dog because apparently he signed with some vegan food. And I found out what happened was the sponsors of the hot dog eating contest, the Shea Brothers, they're called, who run the whole Coney Island thing. They found out about it, and then they rewrote the contract, and basically, which barred him from this year.
Okay.
I guess it was some anger issues or something like that.
Yeah, some bad blood.
But he has no bad blood, Joey Chestnut.
Oh,
he's
good.
Just like, well, you know, it is what it is. They've changed the contract on me before, but it just happened that I had signed a new deal with some food people stuff like that.
He's got to look out for Joey.
Yeah, he's looking out for Joey.
Sure, sure.
Wait, who sponsors the? Is it a hot dog?
Right?
It is Nathan's.
Yeah. But this company, this LLC called the Shea Brothers. Two brothers who live out there, and they're the ones who incorporate Nathan's and stuff, and they're the ones who
do this
whole
thing. They put on the contest,
right? Yeah, they put on the contest. But what I did find out also, remember we talked about how his biggest challenger over the years was Kobayashi.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Kobayashi, who had basically said he was retiring because of health issues. From all these eating contests.
Sure.
Wow. What else did Kobayashi eat? Did he just eat hot dogs?
Tacks. Nails.
he ate glass.
Glass.
He ate shards of glass.
I have no idea.
Because these guys all enter different contests. Because, you know, a Chestnut is like a burger eating a champion. He's a burrito eating champion.
Okay. Not just the hot dogs.
Not just the hot dog.
Kobayashi is the guy that used to dip the buns
in
the water, right?
But he's
the one that started it,
I think he did, But anyway, so to recap this, I just found out today that Chestnut and Kobayashi on Labor Day, Kobayashi's coming out of retirement to challenge Chestnut in a hot dog eating contest on Labor Day, which will be televised on Netflix.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's going to be called Unfinished Beef.
All right.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay.
Live on Netflix, Labor Day.
Wow. And so, when is Labor Day? It's in September?
I think it's like the 11th or something like that. All right.
You know what I'd like?
It's my birthday.
There you go.
Is Labor Day this year?
No, September 11th.
September
11th. Yeah, but anyway.
Yeah.
Is it August, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I'm sorry.
Oh, why? Oh.
So,
I hope they didn't do a Mark David Chapman and do it for you, did they? They're like, I hope this impresses him.
I would like to have thought so, you know. But
the hot dog thing,
Bin
though.
Laden was a big fan of mine.
I love the iguanas. Their early work is playing in those videos of him. Like,
oh, God.
Come in. We're with the FBI.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry, man. You were saying something.
No, I just said so. That's something to look forward to.
All right. Yeah. It's good. Good to have
Labor Day.
Okay.
Kobayashi and Joey.
What's it called again?
The Unfinished Beef.
Yeah.
Because Kobayashi is the only guy who ever gave him a run for his money and actually beat him a couple times. But he had won like 12 years in a row.
How old are these guys now? Kobayashi's like in his 40s.
I think Chestnut's probably in his late 30s to early 40s. They're probably about the same age each.
I like that they're going to get some money from a Netflix thing, but it'd be cool if it wasn't broadcast and it was just done old school, like a duel where they meet like on the edge of town with their seconds, and it's just two guys just eating hot dogs.
The loser gets shot.
Face to face. There's nobody around to watch it. There's two dudes just... pounding tubes.
Loser leaves town.
How do they make money off that?
They don't make money. That's what I'm saying. I just wish it was kind of old school Southern
just for the honor.
Southern honor. Right. And they bring their seconds.
Right on. Well, Manny, I was had something slightly interesting here. Perhaps I took a trip to the Gulf Coast this Monday and Tuesday here. Went to Biloxi, just wanted to get out of town overnight. And we did meet a friend, a guy who was on the podcast way back when we were still doing it, The Ring Room, Paul Bonger. And if you recall, Paul is the executor and grandson of Dusty Bonger and the Dusty Bonger Foundation. Anyway, she was a great abstract expressionist painter, and his father was Lyle Bonger, a great photographer. And anyway, Paul was there. They have the Dusty Bonger Foundation Museum in Biloxi, which is on the campus of the Orr O'Keeffe Museum, where they also had the show that I wanted to see, which was Bob Tannen and Frank Gehry. And Frank Gehry is an architect who designed all those buildings over there. And I was actually, so Bob Tannen's a guy, city planner, artist, conceptualist. And I was telling our guest here about going to see the show, and he's telling me that he just recently moved into Bob Tannen's house here in New Orleans. Yep. So it shows
with
you.
With the pool.
With the pool.
With the pool, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So it's a small town here.
Well, sounds like a great trip.
It was. It was fun. Shout out to the Orr O'Keeffe Museum. Everybody should go check that out in Biloxi. It's a great treasure here in the South. What else?
I don't know. I mean, you just kind of killed the vibe with that story. But anyway.
Oh, I like it. What was you were telling me more about that. What was the Orr O'Keeffe thing there, but what was the Dusty's?
Well,
that's
so,
a permanent
yeah,
museum there?
Yeah, yeah. The Dusty Bonger Foundation Museum is right there on campus. And
campus is this?
Well, it's the Orr O'Keeffe Museum, which is like seven or eight different buildings that
but
are.
But you say campus. So well, what college is this?
Well, it's not a college campus. They call it the grounds, if you want to.
That's okay,
just
a
word I'm using. But they actually do refer to it as the campus. And Paul Bonger actually is a great photographer, and he has an exhibit of infrared photographs that he's been taking, of digital infrared photographs, and he's.
And when was he on the show?
He was on the show back probably like 2019, I'm guessing.
Oh god,
somewhere around there. First 100 episodes, somewhere in there. So it was great to see Paul, hang out with him. He's a guy who, he and I can start talking, and 3 hours go by, and not a gap in the conversation the whole time. He's and I was bringing up all these things. It's like, well, Paul, so was your dad Lyle into sports? You know, Lyle's kind of like a man's man, kind of sailor, almost like a I don't know, one of these old school kind of guys,
like a Marlboro man, or
or like old man in the sea, one of these
like Ernest Hemingway, or Robert
Hemingway
Mitchum
sort of characters, yeah. You know, and I said, was Paul into sport? I mean, was Lyle into sports? He goes, no. I said, but I bet he was into bullfighting. He goes, yes, he was. so he's one of those kind of guys.
Nice.
You know, had a million different occupations, yeah. Could figure out anything, is also a great artist. And anyway, the Bongers are a powerhouse down there in Biloxi. See what else? Well, we had one more political thing here, and maybe we can move on to our guest. Recent Supreme Court ruling, they came down where Trump was trying to ask if the president would have immunity, blanket immunity, to do anything he wanted during
his. They said yes.
They said yes. And I thought, well, okay. If you want to play it like that, I mean, if Biden wanted to be bold,
yeah,
he would have Trump arrested or killed, and then have a couple of or three Supreme Court justices assassinated.
Right. So, yeah.
Just let's test. Put your money where your mouth is.
No. I thought the same thing the other day. I'm like, oh, y'all like making fun of my debate performance? I'm gonna blow up the New York Times. He just goes full batshit crazy.
You said it.
You said I could do it.
It's your rules.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I thought the same thing, Renee. That would be so balls out if he's like, who's a doddering old man now?
Right.
Well, yeah, he just might. If he's smart enough, he might, you know. But anyway, all right, so let's get our guest
because
he's talking like way more than us.
No, I'm just still peppering.
Yeah. He's got a personality on him. We like that. Okay, well, our guest here, he's been suggested by a number of guests, previous guests over the years. You know, you should get this guy on. So we finally have
put it all together.
Yes.
That's great.
So, you know, it's like everything falls in its time, like Paul Masson, you know. It's like And so this guy's he's an actor, he's a film worker, comic, radio DJ, musician. He's a producer and hosted the comic strip comedy burlesque show for many years. He also starred in Henry Griffin's indie film Mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the MC for Fleur de Tees, Burlesque Review, and on and on and on. We're going to get into all that. But without further ado, the great Mr. Chris Lane.
That was great. Chris. Thank you. No, man, that was great. That was
a
wonderful.
Did you feel good about yourself?
Yeah, I did. No, seriously, the other day I was just like, I'm 53 and I'm I have a
co-pilot. Well, Renee's a really good liar.
No, he just pumps it. You need to write my resume. No,
literally. He loves to kiss ass.
Like, literally?
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. But anyway, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Thank you, Manny.
Yeah.
Glad to have you here.
You don't seem like an ass kisser, Manny.
No, I know.
And you're running for mayor. That's interesting. That's good.
I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who would characterize me as an ass kisser, man.
I know. I would never think.
It's not my normal MO.
The first time,
reputation out on the street.
The most recent time I got reacquainted with Renee was, I think, at Michael D's on Mardi Gras about 3 years ago. It was during COVID.
Okay.
Like 3 or 4 years ago, I was in costume, and I started hammering on the door, and you're on the balcony, like, who is it? And I was like, let me in, and you're like, who the fuck are you? Like, who the fuck are you? He's guarding the Michael D's kingdom down in the French Quarter.
Well, sometimes on a day like that, you know, people will show up, and Michael has a lot of friends. I don't know who they are, and so anybody hearing a knock at the door will just let somebody in, and they'll be walking around, and Michael will come and go, do you know who that person? I go, no, I thought he's a friend of yours. They go, I don't know those people.
Well, we ended up sitting down and chatting in the back area.
Patio.
Back patio area. It was grand.
You and I, another guy who we never have a lack of something to talk about when we get together. It's funny. I've run into you. It's two places I run into you, at Michael D's house or Speedy Oil Change
on Carrollton Avenue. Sponsors of the Troubled Man Podcast.
Shout out to Speedy Oil Change, man. I love those guys.
I love them. I'm not lying. They're great.
Look,
vacuum your car?
No, but they don't rip you off.
And they'll do, like, if you go to
the one by me, they vacuum my car.
Okay.
They probably would if you asked. I don't care. I don't want my car vacuumed because that means they got to move my stuff.
Yeah.
It's like I don't want the maids in my hotel room either, you know. Don't touch my stuff. Just leave, let it alone. But
what stuff do you have in your car?
What do you leave
in your car?
Just my items. Different items I have in my car. Anyway.
Like your gun?
Look, you're joking. My father always used to carry a gun in the glove compartment of the car because that's legal too. It's in Louisiana, the car is an extension of your domicile. So you can legally have a gun with.
So what stuff that you leave in your car? Like a tissue box or something? Or
papers,
tools?
Amplifier.
You leave your amplifiers in your car?
Well, I leave my bass cabinet in the car. The bass cabinet
over
is something.
Overnight?
Overnight, yeah.
Really? You're not worried about getting it ripped off?
No one will steal a bass cabinet, as
No,
it
it's
turns
too heavy,
out.
Yeah.
It's one of these items. You could leave it on in front of the house.
It's a deterrent. Deterrent by its appearance. It's too heavy to move.
It's awkward. So it's an unstealable item. Anyway, those guys, if you go in with a problem, they will address it right away. They don't make you wait 4 days to figure out what your problem is.
They don't blow smoke up your ass. They're good folks. Thank you, Speedy.
Anyway, back to our guest, Chris Lane. Now, so Chris, you're not from New Orleans. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up right outside. Well, I was born in Aroostook County, Maine, which is way up north. So like Aroostook County.
Oh, Brother Dave coming in
Brother
with a new haircut.
Yeah, that's a new fancy haircut.
Well,
Mr. Dave Clemens just walked on in.
Yeah,
it is.
You just touched that dog, so I'm not touching you. You just touched that animal.
Wearing a blue velvet studio T-shirt.
Looking good. Looking good.
Shout out to Tom Stern.
He's doing the double blue. He got the blue denim on.
Bluer than blue.
He's touching the disco dog.
Oh, yeah.
They got dogs with glow stick collars here.
Right. So you're Maine, okay.
Yeah, so I was born in Aroostook County, Maine, on an Air Force base in Limestone. It was in Limestone, Maine. My mom's from Fort Fairfield. Her grandfather had a potato farm in Presque Isle, Maine. And the Carl Yastrzemski and his brother had a potato farm right down the street. Yaz and his brother had a potato farm right across from my great grandfather's. And then I was raised outside Boston, and then I came down here in 1990.
Your father was in the military?
My dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah. Okay.
My pops was in the Air Force.
Now, do you think they should bring back the draft? Because a lot of people think that's something we should do to cut down on many things that are troubling this country, like juvenile crime.
Some training. You know,
I don't think it'll help with juvenile crime. I think what it might do is put enough skin in the game that people get interested in politics again, because that would be my main thing. Like, if you are threatened with getting into a military exercise or a military mission and you really understand what it entails, you'll be a lot more cognizant of what's going on with politics, I think.
You think today's politics, because everything is like 5 seconds and someone says something, then it's not true and all that stuff.
Oh, that could be true, too. Yeah, I mean, like, compulsory military service, I think... I mean,
well, it wouldn't have to be like carrying a gun. You could have other sorts of, you know, community service. You could have like the Peace Corps and
stuff. Yeah, you could
like
do that.
You know, like have sending people like, you know, like the WPA going into areas of Appalachia
or should we just draft people to make drones?
So you're saying drafting people strictly for military action. And Renee's saying, like, what if they built bridges and did, like, a...
Well, they do that anyway, like the...
Do they?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm saying it wouldn't have to be a strictly military draft. That could be one component of the...
Compulsory...
Service.
Federal service.
Yes.
Now, if you were to go into the military...
If I were to go into the military...
Yeah, would you follow in your dad's steps, or would you go, like, the Navy or something?
Here's the funny thing about this, and this is no shade on my pops. He saw the writing on the wall with Vietnam, and he goes, what's the wing of the service gets the least amount of action?
USO.
No, it was actually, no, they're not really in the service. They're just, I don't know if you knew that. Bob Hope wasn't, he wasn't a Marine.
But Ann Margaret, remember Ann
Margaret? Oh, everyone remembers Ann Margaret.
Oh, fuck yeah. I rode an elevator with her in New York.
And what happened?
And from the 11th floor down to the lobby, I fucking told her that I used to jack off to her.
Really?
What'd she think about
that's 11 floors?
She was impressed.
Yeah. Did you tell her every floor, or how long did it take?
Well, we were at 11th floor. We had to stop to pick up some more people, like on the 5th.
Did you just keep repeating it for every floor?
No, I just said, you know, I remember seeing you as a young man in Carnal Knowledge, and I just thought, you know, you fucked Elvis, and you're sitting there with Jack, and your fat tits are hanging out there in Carnal Knowledge.
Yeah.
And man...
Were you the elevator operator at this place?
No.
Okay, all right, just want to check you out. Didn't know how you got in there.
It was a Hilton.
Okay, it was a Hilton. Yeah. There we go. Shout out to Hilton. That's another proud sponsor of the Troubled Man.
Okay, I wish.
No, my dad saw the writing on the wall. He decided to get into the Air Force. And so he goes, like, they see the least amount of action. Vietnam's going on. I'll be in the Air Force. Then he left. He was actually a golf pro. He was a golf pro for about almost 40 years.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So then I came down here, went to Tulane University.
Now, what possessed you to come to New Orleans? Just to get as far away from Maine as possible?
No, you know what it was? I'd always had like this fix, you know, like a lot of folks that aren't from here, you get that romantic fixation on it. And I've been thinking of
Tennessee Williams, Truman Capote hype.
Sort of, you know, I thought about this the other day because I was like, oh, God, what the hell? You know, with the heat coming on, hurricane season, everything going wrong, I was like, why the hell did I move here? And then I kind of like nailed it for that wave of transplants that I was a part of. I was like, because I moved down here in around 90, right? And in the mid to late 80s, when a lot of us were in our teenage formative years, that's when Tom Waits wrote like the great Swordfish Trombone trilogy, right? Mm. And then Angel Heart came out, right? With Mickey Rourke and Lisa Bonet.
Right.
So a lot of us, before we moved down here, were like, oh, if I go down to New Orleans, I can drink all day, and I I'll get to fuck Lisa Bonet. And then we all came down here. We're like, oh, no, this isn't going to work out. Well, none of it's true.
You can drink all day, though.
You can do that, yeah. And then I think...
fuck somebody who would like to be Lisa Bonet.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. And then the other thing I thought is, like, since after that, like, the post-Katrina... transplants, a lot of them that were romanticized the city that came down here, they all wanted to like help rebuild or became Big Frida's background dancers. So there's this culture clash between the Lisa Bonet wannabe paramours and the Tom Waitsians.
Okay.
And the Big Fridians.
Well, the do-gooders.
Sort of the do-gooders. Yeah, I mean
you weren't part of the do-gooder.
I became one slightly. And I still have inklings.
Wasn't your initial impulse?
It wasn't. No.
He's trying to get in on the
see, I came down because of the movie Down by Law.
Really?
Yeah. That was one. They all get arrested for doing nothing, and then they just escape prison.
John Lurie, I found this out recently, from Worcester, Mass.
Yeah. He's from Massachusetts.
I didn't know that. Yeah, he's from Worcester, Massachusetts. That's where they grow him.
Okay.
So yeah, so I came on down here. So I always had this, like, you know, this, like a lot of folks had this romanticized notion of it. Got into college, came down here, and that's.
What did you do at Tulane? What was
that? Very little, little as possible. I got a degree in English, which is weird because I spoke it before I went there.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We spoke it in my house.
Yeah.
my parents. Did
you use verbs?
Yeah. Oh, all the time.
Lots of verbs.
Adjectives.
Of verb.
Oh, yeah. So many fond memories. Yeah. Yeah. Thanksgiving. Interjections. Pronouns. Yeah. Oh, okay. So many.
The whole
beautiful.
Whole
and all our Christmas cards had English in them.
So you graduated Tulane and you just stuck around.
I didn't stick around. I got the hell out.
You went back to the airport.
I went back to
Air Force.
I went back to Massachusetts for about a year and a half and then went out west.
Well, can we go back a second?
Yeah.
Tell us about your childhood. So growing up, were you into music?
That's funny. Yeah. You know what?
What kind of bands were you listening to? What kind of, you know, what clique were you in?
I was not a nerd and I wasn't a jock at that time. And I know it's kind of fallen on my brother was what they call a sked.
What is that?
A sked is like a druggy burner, like a burner kid, right? So it's like
that term either.
A sked, yeah. A sked was that was what we call it. I was a Boy Scout, but I was also kind of a spaz. So I was a spaz.
So you had
I wasn't
a spaz already for being a Boy Scout?
Yeah, no, I was a nerd. Yeah, that's how they got you in. They spazzed me in. No, I wasn't a nerd or a jock. So like I sucked at math and sports, so I was just like kind of in the middle. So I was just kind of this goofy, kid. And then when I was younger, when you asked about music, that was funny. That was a funny thing. I actually joined Columbia Records, you know, for like a dollar, and
best record deal in the business.
It was amazing, and that kind of got me into a lot of things. And then we also had we had great radio stations at that time. We had WBCN and we had WFNX. WFNX was also had a sister newspaper called The Phoenix, which was very much like The Village Voice within Boston, right? It was great. So that kind of diversified the stuff that I was hearing on regular FM. my parents had really good taste. They weren't crazy out there, but they played a lot of great music for me growing up. Like I really rediscovered this when I came down here, but my parents had Cannonball Adderley, Country Preacher. My mom and I used to listen to the Beatles a lot growing up, a lot of Cat Stevens, Harry Chapin. But when I was around 13, that's when my musical horizons broadened a little bit more. They've broadened even more as I've gotten older. They haven't narrowed. But yeah,
so what year is it when you're 13?
I was 13. That was 1984.
All right, so that's new wave, post-punk.
Yeah,
and so some of the post. What are you listening to?
At that time, I was listening to a lot of the Smiths and then Bo Diddley. Bo Diddley and a lot of Smiths.
Yeah, I never cared for the Smiths.
I liked
really?
I never liked
the Smiths. Oh, wow, not at all.
No, I just, there was a couple songs I could listen to. But
which
never.
Ones?
They're big hits. That's basically
okay. All right.
Well, Manny and I—that was kind of like Manny and I were adults by the time
okay.
that was happening.
Okay.
So you know, we, and we weren't like in college, so yeah. College radio was not a thing for us.
Yeah, I just thought it was just so gay, the Smiths.
No, they were specific. That's the funny thing is they were specifically marketed as a gay band.
Yeah.
Their first bass player was married and had like two kids. And
but their guitar player, I care. He went
Johnny Marr.
Yeah, he went on to do some stuff that I
great
did
stuff.
Big. Yeah,
yeah. Andy Rourke, the bass player.
Yeah, but that guy Morrissey never liked him.
No, interesting.
Yeah, never liked him.
He's a tough. You know what? He catches a lot of shade nowadays. Here's the thing, though. Like a gay kid growing up in Manchester, England, in the 70s, you got to be tough. So I have mad respect for him. And he's an amazing lyricist, and incredible line of breath, or breath of line, I should say, on his lyrics. The way he hits it, his amazing metric sense.
All right, first time anybody's jumped in to defend Morrissey on this podcast.
Yeah, I did it. So I'll do it. Right. I'll do it.
And you'll do it again.
And I'll do it again.
To the day you die.
Right on.
Go change your underwear, Manny.
Right on. So,
I'm not wearing any right now.
Commando. So collecting a lot of records, going to shows? I mean, Boston has a ton of shows there. Were there venues that you could get into?
There were some that I went in. I went and saw a couple of... I'm trying to think of the... When I was younger, the shows I could get into. I was kind of... Like I said, I was a Boy Scout, Eagle Scout.
You're an Eagle Scout.
I was an Eagle. Yeah.
But did you ever have any Scoutmasters behave
inappropriately
with
you? He's asking if I've ever been molested. No. No. Well, the guy who taught us first aid actually got arrested for molesting a bunch of kids. So he came around to all these different scout troops and taught first aid. And so the first aid merit badge. And so that guy, after a year and a half after he taught us first aid, he got busted.
Look, you go back to you see that documentary on the Boy Scouts? Going back to the very beginning of the establishment of the Boy Scouts, within a year or two, they already had files on a ton of guys who were volunteering and already,
like the Catholic
already
Church.
Putting their hands on kids.
Yeah.
And so the Boy Scouts have maintained a
secret file.
A secret file the whole time.
Yeah.
And again, didn't turn them into the police, just kind of tried to keep them away.
Shuttle them off.
But, or send them somewhere else.
Or have them teach a merit badge that didn't require touching. They're what if we give them basket weaving? Maybe they won't touch the kids this time.
When you think about it, who wants to go spend time outside with children alone?
Yeah. Oh, just in general, that's the thing. Like we're just little, 12-year-old boys, just disgusting. But that guy did get busted. I don't know what happened with him. To this day, I kind of still want to find out what happened to that dude, because our scoutmaster was just mortified. Like, he was just really crestfallen that he had put his kids in that position. It was just this deep shame. So I was an Eagle Scout. But I'm a proud Eagle Scout. And saying that, burn that organization to the ground.
So,
burn them to the ground.
How come the Boy Scouts don't sell cookies?
For fundraising? Well, the funny thing is now the Boy Scouts do accept girls and boys. So I don't know what they're doing these days.
Now they just call it the Scouts.
They just call it the Scouts.
Change their name.
So now the Scoutmasters have girls and boys to play.
Yeah, so either way, it's a smorgasbord.
Oh, God, it's so dark now. Now it's we didn't think this one through, guys.
Right, exactly. Now, what about the LGBTQ high-five people? Are they allowed in the Scouts?
I believe so, yeah. I don't think they can discriminate at all on that.
Okay.
Right. Well, that's good for you, Renee.
I don't have anything to do with the Scouts. Right. Or the community, really. Yeah. I mean, anyway, we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But
let's get into it. No, I'm joking.
It's a running theme. Yeah. Now, are you doing any theater in school, community theater?
No, I didn't. You know what? It's so funny. I didn't. I hung out with a bunch of meatheads when I was in junior high, and they really poo-pooed that. They were the real meatheads. And they really
poo-pooed. Now, when you say meatheads, is it like Rob Reiner and All in the Family? Those guys?
No.
Are you talking about jarheads?
Jarheads, towny pieces of shit. And I didn't know
any. Sled hogs on Welcome Back
Connor. No, not even that cool. That'd be great. No, they were just some of them were, one or two of them were cool, but
they
were
talking about jarheads.
Yeah, just macho. dipshits from fucks, Massachusetts,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So like they kind of poo-pooed that, and I was like, yeah, you're right, that's gay, that's stupid to do theater. So I didn't do any of that. I didn't do that until I went to prep school for a year, and I actually didn't do it through college at all. And it wasn't actually until after college, Henry Griffin visited me when I was in Arizona, and he had already sold a script and he had an idea for Mutiny. So when I came back, he was like, I really want you to be in this. And that's how I got back into it. It was through
nice,
Mutiny.
Nice. And we want to talk about all that Mutiny. That's a perfect teed up for the second half of the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's do it later. Sorry.
But Manny, I think it's about that time.
Yeah. We like to take a break. The nation knows the drill. So we'll be right back.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coman, back with our guest, Mr. Chris Lane. Now, Chris, I thought you might have listened to some of these shows before, but apparently not. But you're listening to this
He's
one right now.
He's a smart man.
I'm listening smart to this one. Right, right.
No, there was one.
Busy. Well, you don't have to. You don't
okay,
have
well,
to,
well, well, no, I won't do that.
Right
I won't do that, no.
But for those of you who listen to the show all the time, you're well aware that we are a listener-supported operation. And, you know, we have the PayPal and the Venmo links there in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook page posts. And this week, we had last week's guest, Steve Lowry, supported the podcast.
Oh,
so shout
really?
Out to Steve Lowry. Yeah, well, you remember that? He was right there at the podcast at the end. He pulled some cash out of his pocket and handed it to us.
That
so
nice.
That was
I don't
nice.
I remember that at all.
No, no. Well, it's he definitely did. Anyway, so thanks to Steve Lowry.
He's a
for
good guy.
Being a guest and a supporter of the
yeah.
show. And, you know, you could be like Steve and use those links, support the podcast if you're listening to it, if you're enjoying it. If you're not, just turn it off. You don't have to listen to this. Shout
That's
out
what
to,
I do.
Shout out to our patrons on the Patreon page. We love you. You're there week in and week out. Also, we have the Facebook. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to the podcast. We could use some more subscribers. Take the plunge. It doesn't cost you anything. And give us 5 stars on the review. That definitely doesn't cost you anything, but helps us a lot. We also have the Troubled Men Podcast t-shirts with the link there available. It's a print-on-demand operation. Get whatever size, whatever
P.O.D.
color.
They call
P.O.D.,
it.
P.O.D., that's right.
Yeah, print-on-demand.
Yeah. So beyond that, you can. I'll be out with the Iguanas, and I'll also be out with Sonny Landreth in the latter part of this month up in the upstate New York area. Our guests close to your region. Closer.
Nice.
Closer to your Maine than New Orleans.
Yes,
yeah. But so you can find all those on my Facebook page or iguanas.com or sonnylandreth.com, I suppose. Anyway, enough of that. Back to our guest, Mr. Chris Lane.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Chris, just when we left you, you were talking about moving down here and the movie Mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mutiny, well, you want to tell us a little bit about it? It's a short. It's, I watched it today, or kind
you did.
Yeah,
had
yeah.
You, had you seen it before?
I had seen it before, and I'd seen it. I've seen it a number of times, but I rewatched it because it's been a year or so since I saw it last. It's really good. So it's kind of like based on a New Orleans group of musicians mm-hmm. trying to leave town for a gig in a van. You're going picking different guys up.
Yep.
And all the bullshit that goes on in bands, and it's written and directed by Henry Griffin.
Yeah.
And one of the leads is this guy Nicky Catt.
Nicky Catt, yeah.
And Nicky Catt, I knew him from Boiler Room, that movie.
Okay, yeah.
Which I think is a great movie.
Never seen it, but it's
really?
All about it's about the guys of Wall Street.
Giovanni
Ribisi and Ben Affleck, I think, is in it.
He's in it too, and Nicky Catt plays a real asshole, but he does a good job.
Is he really playing though?
Well,
is he really playing?
That's kind of what I impression that
is
I got
he acting?
So I actually ran across Nicky Catt a few years ago. The Iguanas were playing, I think, in Northern California.
Okay.
One of these places like Santa Rosa or something like that. And Nicky Catt came to the gig.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the gig, he was trying to get us to go back to his house or his mom's house with him and hang out, and I really wanted to do it.
Why didn't the rest of the band
the
do it?
The band's like, get the fuck in the van, Renee. I'm like, let's go with Nicky.
I like the idea that he went, he's like, let's go back to my mom's house and do coke.
Yeah.
That would just be, that's even more.
That's
no,
exactly.
Nicky's a nice enough fella. I haven't seen him in a minute. But I will say about Mutiny is that it is probably the most important piece of American cinema about dipshit jazz musicians that's ever been made. And you got so many choices.
Alex McMurray's
in it.
Theral DeCluet.
Oh yeah. Rio Hackford.
Yeah.
Rio Hackford's in it.
It's a real, and today more than ever, it's a document of a time. I mean,
yeah.
Alex McMurray as a young man. Yep. You as a very
me
young
as
man.
A very young. I had hair. God damn it. I had hair like a Disney princess.
Yeah.
Oh, I look so fucking cute. I look cute now. I look like a cute.
Well, you've kept your girl as.
I have my
like
yeah, yeah, and I have a nice shaped skull for a bald guy, so I look like kind of a cute white nationalist. But back then, sweet Jesus,
or
I look cute.
Maybe like a prisoner, you know.
That movie was really fun. It was based on Henry's experiences with the Klezmer All Stars, watching them interact as band members and friends,
and fight over bullshit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, as frenemies, just like because they were really contentious, and then also the free jazz bands that would play all over town back in like the 80s and 90s. So they're like, what if we took these goofballs that take their music, they play dissonant free jazz, and we put them
that nobody else cares about.
No one gives a shit about them. They outnumber the audience members. Yeah, I mean, like there were some great free jazz bands that I saw in that time period, especially that played like at the Dragon's Den, like Gilgamesh. I don't remember if you remember Gilgamesh.
I remember the name. Yeah.
Weirdos, big weirdos, great weirdos. So he took that, made a fictionalized account, made it into a short film that actually got into Sundance. So
we got
into Sundance. I was in it. I played a character loosely based on Kevin O'Day. We're mentioning like a bunch of dead people that folks might not know about this, but Kevin O'Day.
Kevin O'Day has come up a bunch.
Yeah. So it was loosely based. My character's name was Kevin, loosely based on Kevin O'Day. And then Theral DeCluet from Galactic was in it. Also, he was also in Dawson's Attack. Rio Hackford, who is a great actor that also passed away recently, owner of One Eye Jacks. And so we shot it over the course of a week in the Irish Channel. And then it got into Jazz Fest, and a bunch of us went out to, not Jazz Fest, I'm sorry, it got into
Sundance.
Yeah. So a bunch of us went out to Sundance.
Oh, you went out there?
Yeah, I went out there.
That must have been fun.
It was a grand time. It was a grand time because, like, Royal Finger Bowl at the time, which was Alex's band, who that iteration of Royal Finger Bowl.
Carlo was in it.
Yeah, and Andy Wolf. They played at. They played at Sundance as well as part of their programming.
Right, I remember that.
So it was a grand time. So we went out there. It was the same year that Blair Witch Project played, and the same year that the South Park guys put their first movie, Cannibal the Musical.
I think you made as much as the Blair Witch Project people made on their
movie.
Oh my
God! Yeah, we didn't make jack shit, but we had so much.
Neither
did they. We had a real blast. We shot it at, like I said, the Irish Channel mostly, and then parts of Chapultepec right before it goes into the Crescent City Connection, and a couple of places that were closer to the Treme. But we shot over the course of a week. And it was
when
great.
You left Sundance, how much money did Carlo borrow from you?
Carlo, I was broke at the time, so he did not borrow it from me at that time.
Okay.
But I do remember one of my favorite things, my Carlo memory from that, is I was like, we all had a hotel room. There was like, seriously, 10 of us in one hotel room. And I remember I had like an empty plastic bottle, and I was hitting the inside of the double sink, just like doing like this little percussion thing. He goes, wait a minute. And then he grabbed another water bottle and he started playing Brazil, like the melody of Brazil, like it was a steel drum with these water bottles on the double one. It was great. And they threw down. They really threw, Royal Finger Bowl really threw down.
Right on.
Yeah,
right on.
It was great.
Now, at this time, are you...
it was $20 he borrowed from me.
What about Blair Witch Project? That was one of the worst movies
I never saw it.
Because it got so much hype when it was released theatrically. And when I saw it, it was like, this is a piece of shit.
The reason I didn't go see that, Manny, is because I saw Jaws when I was a kid. I used to love swimming. I loved swimming in the ocean. I loved it. And then I saw Jaws, scared the shit out of me. Now that's scared for me. I love camping, so I didn't want to go see the Blair Witch Project and have that ruined camping.
See, I hate both of those things.
Really?
Yeah, so do I.
I don't like being in the ocean.
Really?
And deep water. Fuck no. It's monster soup. Why would I want to be in there, man?
Yeah, I know. That's what it is now. That's what I'm thinking.
I don't want to be out in the forest.
Yeah, no.
You know.
No.
Well, you were a Boy Scout, so
I was a Boy Scout.
You were waiting for the Scoutmaster to show up.
Yeah. No!
Put his hands on you.
No way.
Were you... dabbling in comedy at this time? Were you...
That's a really wild question. Because, all right, this is...
Thank you.
It's good. Because here's the thing. When I was at Tulane, there was this one kid. We were all different people. We were young. And we all had our young and annoying face. But there was this one kid we went to school with that was trying to be a stand-up comedian. And I went on a road trip with him once. And we went through New York City.
This is while you're in school.
Yeah, while I'm in school.
So it's like a break, spring break.
Yeah, spring. Yeah, something like, it's like summer break is in between terms, right? So this guy who always wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and there's a really nascent comedy scene here in New Orleans. Excuse me.
I think that might be the first time that word's been used on the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think, very good. Ding, ding, ding. and so... I went on a road trip with him. We stopped in New York City, went to some open mics, and not only did he suck, but everyone else sucked. And I was like, these people are horrible. I loved comedy. I was like, I never, ever want to be around them. I don't want to do it. This is dog shit. And so what happened is, fast forward, way after Katrina, because I went up to Shreveport after Katrina. I came back. Rio Hackford, who was in Mutiny, owned One Eye Jacks. They had Fleur de Tease had just started. They had only done like 5 shows. And he and the other owner hated the host. So unbeknownst to me, he told the producer of the show, Trixie Mink, he's like, if you don't let this guy host your show, I'm going to end your show. It's not going to be on here anymore.
Okay.
I didn't know that. So he goes, why don't you come in and host the show? I'm like, yeah, I'll try it. So I come in. Trixie already hates my guts because I'm getting forced into it.
Right.
And I don't know this. I swear to God, I did not know this for 3 years that he had told her this, right? So I start trying, and I'm good at it, and I get better and better. Actually, it started slightly prior to that. It was actually a little bit before Katrina. So
you hadn't even done something like that.
No.
You just had a quick wit and a gift of gab.
Yeah, I used to screw around and joke around with Rio and stuff like that. But there was actually, I misspoke. When he had the Matador, which used to be the Mint on Esplanade, right? He had these 4 comedians. This was like the year, like 6 months before Katrina. He had, no, a little more, like 8 months before
Katrina. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, details.
Don't get
He had 4 comedians come in from Los Angeles for 2 nights. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a host with them. The first night, it didn't go well because they didn't have a host. We ended up hanging out that night and like drinking until like 4 or 5 in the morning. They're like, and then one of the comedians is like, "You're a good guy. We want you to host the show tomorrow." Okay. I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, sure, I'll do that. That's fine." And I ate shit on my bike on the way home and just like opened up my arm. It looked like I slaughtered a goat in my kitchen. There was just like from the kitchen door to the washer, blood just bath. Blood. Yeah. So then I wake up, eat some food, try to become human, and then I make it over to the Matador later on, right? And I start doing my host set. I'd never ever done it before.
Who were the comedians?
They were these four guys from L.A. Yeah. There were four guys. I forget their names. Okay. I think one of them was he was a Middle Eastern dude, Muslim dude that actually ended up making documentaries about being a Middle Eastern comedian in America post 9/11. But this is the weird thing. So two comedians in. I'm doing the intro. I'm doing okay. I got the plane leveled out. And then the front door opens and Doug Stanhope and Dave Attell walk in.
Oh, fuck.
They're just in town for the weekend. The weekend and they're just partying.
Two of the greatest ever.
This is what happens. So then the next comedian goes, "I don't want to go on. I'm going to cede my time to Dave and Doug." And then Dave Attell and Doug Stanhope took over for 45 minutes and just...
I was at that show.
You were at the Matador?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. No, yeah. I think I told you this before.
Wow.
Destroyed the place.
Yes.
Destroyed the place.
They were playing at the Sanger or something like that.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. And they came to the Matador just to get some cocktails, yeah. And Rio said, "Go on stage." And I had a brother. My brother-in-law was in town on business.
Yeah.
He's from California, so we went out to dinner and we're walking around the quarter. We go end up at the Matador.
Yeah.
And Luke Spurallen is the bartender.
Yeah.
Luke is the bartender, and I said to my brother-in-law, I said, "Let's go into the Matador, see what's going on." And Dave Attell's on stage. Yeah. And Rio sees me, goes, "Manny, you want to do some, a few minutes?
You want to follow Dave Attell?"
Yeah. And I'm like, "No fucking way." Yeah.
Pal, you want to do it?
Yeah.
You want to go up?
You want to go up there?
Hey, pal.
And here's the thing, though. Luke goes, "Manny, they set some time for you if you want." I'm not going on there, man. There's no fucking way. And my brother-in-law's going, "Well, why don't you want to go on?
You want to follow Miles Davis?"
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not lying. It was, I use this phrase with a lot of different mediums of art and stuff. It was what I call frictionless. Frictionless is like when you see an ice skater just melt the ice with their blade. It's like, right. That's what it was. It's like, that is, no one's ever said this about Dave Attell, but like just poetry. Like it just broke through everything. Like there was the space time collapsed.
Yes.
It was,
and I remember he was doing that bit when he
says, "What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?"
Exactly. He goes,
"How's your night
going
to end?
Dog tonight?"
Yeah.
You know, that kind of
no, he said that. I said this. He goes like this. He goes, "What are you? You tell me what you're drinking, and I'm gonna tell you how your night's gonna end." And I shout out, "I'm drinking again." As he goes, "You're gonna have 5 more of those, and then go home with a chick and fuck her, but she's gonna have a clit bigger than your dick." And it was like, "Whoa!"
So what happens? Make a long story short is that Rio says, "Manny, you can go on." I go, "No." And the luck.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law, who's drinking a beer, and Dave Attell's killing. He does a spit take on the guy in front of him.
Yeah.
Hits the guy's back of his head. Hits the spit, you know, and I go, "Bruce, we got to go.
Yeah.
This guy's angry. Yeah. Let's get the fuck out."
It was
here.
A rowdy, it became in such an insanely rowdy night.
I remember that, and I walked him back to his hotel room in the quarter, and I rode my bike all the way back to my apartment at the Circle Bar. Yeah. I said, "I'm so glad."
It was it was an amazing night.
Wow.
So that was the first time.
Crazy that both of you guys were there.
Yeah.
So that was my first taste of it. And then after Katrina, Rio got me into doing burlesque. I started hosting for a while. Farrah, Lindsay.
Now, when you were doing burlesque, you kept your clothes on, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's a wise move.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was very...
We've had people on the show. Yeah.
We're all doing... This Troubled Man podcast is done completely in the nude.
Oh, God, I'm quitting.
Completely
trouble,
in the nude.
Right.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Spanx.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. You know, we actually did get approached recently by the publicist for... Someone who has developed some sort of underwear product that it's like an ED product, like an erectile dysfunction product.
Okay, not executive director.
I don't know how that could possibly work.
Are you serious? They really approached you?
Yeah. And said, well, would you like?
Because he's got that problem.
Yeah. Well, no, because we have this platform, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Anyway, sorry.
Did you take the sponsorship?
Well, it wasn't a sponsorship. They wanted to be on the show.
Okay.
Oh, well, let's get him on the show.
Well, he's going to be remote, so it's
we got to do that.
I don't know.
If he would come sit here
with us, I would do it. You know, we're going to do Keith O'Brien remotely, but it's not so much fun. I like to have somebody here I can smell.
Yeah, and I actually have an erection right now, unlike that guy.
Well, you can. Yeah. It's the way I'm talking. Right. Go on.
So I started hosting burlesque shows with Fleur de Tease, and I ended up doing that for about 11 years. With them,
and that was during like the big resurgence.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
they had a number of shows going around. The Shim Shamettes were active.
It was post Shim Shamettes.
Okay.
I don't want to throw shade. Oh, I'm gonna throw shade, but yeah, I mean, like now it's everywhere and everyone's doing it.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It's too much. Too much of it. Yeah. But anyways, I did that for a long time.
And most of it now, the chicks are just not that good looking.
It's not even that. I like the live music. I like group numbers where there's like choreographed pieces and stuff like that. You know, most of the stuff that I see, I mean, for the most part, people are having a good time, but it's just kind of corny. A lot of the music's corny.
Yeah.
At some point, did you start doing some film work, right? You're working, you become an IOTC member.
Yeah, that happened after Katrina. What happened is Katrina, like, it's so funny because I was not that funny, but it was weird. I was living with my good friend Mike Meal in the Bywater, and it was great because he owned the house. He had just recently broken up with his girlfriend, and so we were just like had this bachelor pad like for 8 months before Katrina, and we were just like tearing it up and just like, you know, just not giving a shit, drinking, being wild, you know, we're in our early 30s but we're acting like 17 year olds and having a grand time.
It's New Orleans, so
we're being goofballs. I go up to New York City in August of 2005 to work on a friend's theater piece, and while we're there Katrina hits, and I'm like, oh snap, I need to get a job. Like, I really just like, oh,
finally,
no, like I need
time
to get a job. So I contact
in the story, you haven't had a job, I mean not a real job,
not a real job. No, I worked at the Green Project. I effed around. I like, you know, it was that I don't want to fall into some type of nostalgia, but the rent back in, you know, the 90s and the aughts was insanely low.
It was cheap. What did you pay me for that apartment you lived in? It was like $220 a month.
It was very cheap.
It was very cheap.
Yeah, anyway. My rent was $200, and I had I had a room that was almost as big as Snake and Jake's in the back.
Nice.
So it was Alex McMurray's current house. Oh. I lived in the back.
Okay.
It was the great room. It was the great room.
The magic room.
Oh, the Boy Scouts again. Oh, the Boy Scouts again. No, it's called the Great Room because it was all, the guy had built this addition on his own, and it was made out of like OSB that he had put like polyurethane on and had cut all this trim work. Jeff Treffinger did the renovation on it.
Of course he did.
He did the renovation on it. Like when he pulled back this, what appeared to be a counter-levered beam, it was just an I-beam that was being held in with like a bolt, just like one bolt. But it was $200. Anyways, everything goes down. I need to get a job. I reach out to some friends in the film industry, and that's when I started working on on movies as a technician. So I started working in the props, in the prop department on set, and then I got into painting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so you're in the painting department. So were you there with people like Steve Walters?
I worked with Steve a couple of times. Yeah.
Steve Walters is one of my heroes, the bass player in the Normals.
Yeah.
One of the coolest guys ever.
He's out west now, right?
Yeah. He's somewhere in the woods, man. Yeah.
We don't talk about it. Steve was with his people.
Retreated into the woods, man. But
He and his lady were both. Yeah. He used to live over by Jazz Fest.
But my good friend Scott Ploche works in the movie business. Mm-hmm. He's a set designer and, mm-hmm. and location scout and stuff. And so he would have all he was a huge Normals fan like I was. It's like, you won't believe who's on my crew.
Well, no, that's the funny thing. I talked to my good friend Brad Banachek. This is before, like, folks that don't know, like the producers guild or whatever they're called. Yeah, it's like the producers guild. They have so many of the crafts over the barrel right now, not just the Writers Guild, but like IATSE and SAG to a degree. They have everyone over the barrel right now. And so we're going through this really bad trough in film production, not just in Louisiana, but everywhere.
They're not making movies in the United States right now. Right?
Yeah, they're really screwing it. They're putting the screws to people. It's really bad.
The only place they're making movies is like Eastern Europe or something.
Yeah, the Eastern Europe, somewhat in Canada. They're doing stuff in Atlanta. They're doing some stuff in Nashville, but they're really trying to put the screws to these locals and stuff like that. But when it was really hitting, I talked to my friend Brad. It's like, you know what happened is, I love that people are working, but the Hollywood South has destroyed the New Orleans metal scene, because like there were so many guys like that were in Suplex and all these, and I Hate God, and that's what their day job were.
Right.
So like all of Suplex, the trio, one of the best bands in New Orleans, Suplex, all are set dressers.
Yeah, yeah, Danny Nick.
Yeah, Danny Nick. Yeah, and Darrell and Andy. Right, they're all, and they all work together.
I gotta get Danny on the show.
Danny's amazing.
Yeah, man,
Danny. They're all great dudes.
Portside. Portside Lounge.
Solid dude. I think they're recording a new album right now.
I saw Super, that. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but I seriously, I like not half joking. It's like Hollywood South has destroyed New Orleans metal. Like, because like all those dudes are working on dog shit movies and dog shit TV series when they should just be like just...
like 18 hours a day.
They got 18 hours.
They got no time.
No time to like...
to play gigs
do,
or
yeah, do cheap
or
coke
rehearse.
And just like dirge metal.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so I did that up until... I pretty much got
so
out.
So you're a metal guy? You like
I
start. Metal?
You know what? During COVID, I really got into metal.
Really?
I really got into metal.
Just
I'm
at
not,
home. You just like, were a headbanger at home.
No, just more like I really like sludgy, melodic type of metal. I don't like the band that I'm really into these days is Big Business, and two of their members, like, they're really just a two-piece, but sometimes I think they expand out to a three-piece. But they were in they did support for the Melvins. One of my favorite bands is Karma to Burn. And during COVID, the guy who was the founding member died. He died in an accident at home. But they were like, Karma to Burn is very much like the Meters of metal. They're this really melodic, driven, like listenable metal, like really beautiful.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen them like, I've seen Karma to Burn like three times, but during COVID, Big Business really, that really like just was this really cathartic release for me.
All right.
In terms of metal, yeah.
Right on. Okay.
And I do love Suplex. I'm not like a hardcore metal guy, but I really, it's a really beautiful cathartic experience. Like I know you said you don't like live music, but I think that's bullshit. Because I remember one of the first times.
You can attest for me.
No, I've seen.
Well, Manny doesn't want to leave his house, so you know.
The first time I saw Manny, it was on your birthday at the Circle Bar, because you had all these dollar pinned to you, and there was I don't know if it was. It was one of Alex's bands, and you were sitting there just screaming your head off and having a great time.
Well, because it was my birthday, and I was fucked
up. Could be. Yeah.
And I lived upstairs, so I didn't have much. I didn't have to drive home.
Oh, there we go. That's all that.
You didn't even have a car.
We got to bring the music to Manny.
Yeah,
we got to start.
Had a bicycle.
We got to start having tiny desk NPR shows at your house. Which I've never seen, by the way. I've never seen it.
When we were doing this show from the Ring Room, or we would meet at Manny's house, Manny wouldn't even want the guest to go into his house.
Yeah. What's the Ring Room? What is this place?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. That sounds scary.
It's the first place that we did the show from. It's a clandestine.
For about a year, and then the pandemic hit.
It was a couple of years. Yeah, we did almost
98
shows.
We have to tell you, we got to kill you.
All right, here's the funny. I wanted to kind of mention this earlier. Because it's something when I was thinking about this doing the show, and you've been around for a long time in the music scene, Randy. Do you think that a lot of things have changed in the New Orleans music scene? But like what I've noticed, especially during COVID, post COVID, is like the venues have gotten like smaller and like not smaller, but scarcer. like in terms of where people can play?
We've definitely lost some rooms that that I used to play in a lot. There are some new rooms that I haven't even been to. I want to go to them, but I don't even know who plays there. You know, it's like in life, you go through different phases and you kind of age out of certain scenes.
Yeah.
New people come up.
Yeah.
They don't know anything about you. They don't know anything about your scene.
Yeah.
Like places like Santos.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I see, like, that seems like a place I would like to go. But, you know, I went to the Gulf Coast.
No, exactly. Like, people do age out of it. I never want to fall into this, like, anecdotage, as Disraeli said. Back in my day, it was amazing.
Okay,
it's like,
I think that's the first time the word anecdotage has been used. Also, the first time Disraeli.
Yes, there we go. We're dropping them.
You are dropping them. I like it. See, I knew I needed to have you on the show. Anyway, moving on in your career, let's get on. So somehow you wind up in the Valparaiso men's chorus.
Oh, yeah. That was grand.
Which is an Alex McMurray endeavor.
It's the best sea shanty band in New Orleans. And here's the thing. People come to New
it's
Orleans.
Probably the only one.
People come to New Orleans for two things, Manny.
Yeah.
Our food and sea shanties. Whenever you hear New Orleans, you think that's what you think. You think seafood. You think sea shanties.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
No, right.
No,
exactly.
No, I don't think
you
that's
exactly
all.
What you
I think.
Think yeah. No. So I'm a
Chris
member of Valparaiso.
Facetious.
Facetious.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So Valparaiso, you know, it's kind of a drinking and social club.
Yes.
Where you have, like, I don't know, 20 singers. And three musicians.
No, we have more. We have seriously, like, eight musicians.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's the band has expanded.
Yeah.
But I think the deal is, like, the musicians get paid, but you guys get drinks.
We get drinks. And also, I think...
But you're not doing it for the money.
No,
this
God,
is,
no.
Again, this is
See,
a social
See, I saw
club.
Them. I saw you guys once.
Just once?
Well, years ago. And I just thought, this is a joke on the audience. They don't really give a fuck about the audience.
No, we love the audience.
You're not singing to us. They're just singing to have fun. That's what
we're
I got.
You're
they're
singing just, to have fun. You can have fun.
Yeah, but you could care
Do you know
less.
What fun is? Have you had fun, man?
Yeah, I have plenty
you can
of fun.
Yeah, I get it.
But I just thought
the Mr. Fun.
The only time I saw you guys is just like, well, this is a one-trick pony. You know, it's like...
It's a great trick, though.
Yeah.
God damn, it's a good trick.
And okay, I saw 5 minutes of it. I'm done. I'm leaving.
Oh, no. Yeah. There's a shape to it. There's shape to it. Yeah. When you know you've talked to Alex has been on the show, no?
Alex has been on the show, yeah. It was during pandemic, during lockdown, so it was remote.
Yeah.
But Jeff Treffinger is a very close personal friend. He's been in the band or one of the singers.
Yeah, one of the singers,
Years. Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, so we're in Valparaiso. So we did our, on a lark, we did our first recording at the Mermaid Lounge. I think it was 2003, and then we did one post-Katrina at the Saturn Bar.
And y'all just played again at Chaz Fest.
We play at Chaz Fest at
the
Broadside.
The Chaz Fest reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Chaz Fest Goes Abroad.
Yep.
My band with Jeff, the Geraniums played.
The remaining
Geraniums.
That's one of my
fun day. Wasn't that the most?
It was a
fun
blast.
Day I could remember having. Frankly.
It was a blast. It was so much fun.
You know, all the people from the Mermaid. I know you worked at the Mermaid for a period of time.
I was one of the only people to get fired from the Mermaid.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was possible.
It was exactly. No, I didn't. Yeah, because in rest in peace to a lot of we're talking about the remaining Geraniums, and then Pat Cronin passed away this past year.
Pat Cronin,
and
rest in peace.
But Pat, I got into it with Brendan and
Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah, he was the one of the owners, and he and I like actively disliked each other and like argued all the time when I was one of the managers, quote unquote managers, at the Mermaid. And Pat
let you go.
Pat had to do that.
Oh.
He made Pat
be the bad guy.
Be the bad guy. And
I can see Pat. Well, you know, Chris.
Chris, you don't know what I'm dealing with over here. It was over the phone. I was at my bullshit day job. He's like, and I was like, Brennan's a fucking asshole. He goes, Chris, you don't fucking know what you're dealing with here. You don't fucking know.
That's, like, that's pretty good.
It was, well, I just remember him because I was working. I was working at the Green Project, so I was like, which is folks in they don't live here. They it's like it's a recycling place for
volunteer.
Yeah, it's volunteer. Non-profit.
Yeah, they have them all over the country.
Yeah, but this is like, but this is a really low rent version. Like, I've been to ones in other cities, and it's good. And I was like carrying like an old toilet or sink, and Pat's screaming at me in his Boston accent. He's like, "You can't fucking do that, Chris." And I was like, "Brent is a fucking jerk off." And he goes, "I gotta let you go.
I gotta let you go."
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So yeah.
Man, that was, look, the mermaid. That those were my glory days.
Oh yeah, grand stuff. Grand stuff. Man, yeah, Pat Crone's great. Man. And Brandon still a fucking prick. Anyways, but let's keep
Brandon,
going.
One of my favorite people, man.
I called him on his bullshit though. That was the funny thing. I called him on his bullshit. I was like, none of these numbers make sense, dude. Like whenever we close up, at the end of the night, I was like, "This doesn't."
Right. Well, Brendan just figured that's not your business. Yeah. It's my bar, so I don't care if these numbers make sense.
Doesn't
or not.
Make any lick of sense, son. Anyways, yeah. So Valparaiso did our first recording at the, at the Mermaid. Did our second recording at the Saturn Bar. It was great. It is seriously an insanely fun band. The musicians are top notch, and the chorus members are complete dipshits. We're goofballs.
But it's an institution. It's still going strong. Yeah. And I could see you guys as such a joy in the whole thing, man.
It's seriously, it's one of the most joyful things that I take part in the city.
Those really, truly joyful things are so few and far between. Mm-hmm. When you find one, hang on to it for dear life.
Oh yeah, I have a 6-year-old, right? So I'm an old dad, and I'm luckily.
How'd you manage that?
It's called it's called ignoring good advice. Okay. No. So I was an old dad. I was an old dad, and luckily,
I'm still an old dad.
Getting older. I was 47 when she was born, and I have luckily a number of friends that were old dads too, like Mike Meal, James Marlowe, who's another great musician from New Orleans that lives in Spain now. James just had his first kid at the age of 52.
Okay.
And so like I see I see my daughter, and I'm just like, screw it, let's just have fun. Like, we had so much goddamn fun during COVID when I wasn't working, because I was like, you know what, we're just gonna go for hikes, we'll go to Coterie Forest. We did a loop where we would walk through Bayou St. John, and we would hit like these the loquat trees that were blooming, the mulberry trees that were blossoming, I should say, and then we'd go to like Coterie Forest and go swimming. Like, so this morning, like, we woke up at way early and went swimming. It's like, you know, I'm a crotchety old dad at times, but those moments, I'm just like, oh man, this is what it's all about. You just got to have fun.
That's it, man. And she will remember that. She will be telling these stories on the Troubled Man podcast long after you're gone.
Or to like a support group. Who knows?
Sure.
Who she'll be telling it to?
Sure, yeah. 12-step program. Sure. Yeah.
And then he made me go swimming at 6 in the morning. No, wasn't that early.
Well, Chris, we could go on forever.
Yeah, we can. We got a few more minutes, though.
We're kind of on the downslope of the podcast. We're kind of winding down. I know you still do these, there is, it's not really a comedy town, New Orleans.
It's gotten better and better, though. There are some amazing producers.
We're still trying. Yeah. And, I mean, people are funny in New Orleans.
Yes. Yeah.
And we like to laugh.
Yeah.
But as everybody goes to see music, people are not in the habit of going to see comics. But you have this comedy fuck yeah program.
No, that's not me. I'm on that a lot. That's my friend Vincent Zambon.
Don't you host it?
No. For point of clarification, that's my friend Vincent Zambon and Ted Orphan's show. I host it pretty regularly. It's every month, Friday and Saturday at the Dragon's Den. So thanks for giving them a shout out. But no, I don't produce it. I host it.
You host it.
Not all the time, but like I intermittently. Yeah. But it's no worries.
Just lie.
Yes,
I'll lie.
Okay. Yes,
just go along.
I invented it. No, but I do host that every so often. My friend Isaac Kozel and Jeffrey Gaucher have some great shows here, like Wait What, Stone versus Stone. Stone versus Drunk versus Sober,
which they do.
Hi-Ho has a lot of great stuff. Troy Duchesne's doing a lot of great stuff.
What's the club on Fulton Street? What's that club?
Oh, that
Comedy
one.
Comedy House, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Comedy House.
Yeah. I heard about that place, but yeah, I don't. Yeah,
they do a lot of workshops there too.
Sure, apparently. They do. I'm sure they do.
Yeah. Not the downtown scene.
They have their thing, and you know,
gotcha.
I'm not gonna mess with them. But that's not. I don't go over there.
Right on.
But the Hi-Ho has some great stuff. Dragon's Den has some great stuff. They're doing good stuff out in Araby. Black Girl Giggles is doing a bunch of stuff this weekend as part of Essence Fest. That's my girl, Geneva Joy Hughes. That's her organization. But it's easier to get people out for like DJ nights and music nights than comedy.
Yeah. Well, a lot of comedians don't even come to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Even like Mark Norman.
Yeah.
You know, he will play like a theater here, but he's from here. It's not a comedy town.
Yeah, a lot of guys go to Lafayette, which is wild.
Yeah, there's a club there apparently that they all like.
Yeah.
Anyway, one more thing.
Yeah.
Manny and I both saw you at Michael D's house this past Mardi Gras.
Oh, it was grand.
And you were dressed as, was that Little Bo Peep?
No, it was the boy who cried wolf.
We saw you.
It was the boy. Yeah. It was the boy who cried wolf.
Oh, right.
You were dressed as the girl.
I was Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Little Lord Fauntleroy. That's what it was.
That was the whole thing. So I had a little bob wig that I made and a little short pants suit.
That's what it was.
And this is what started. So.
We talked about it on the podcast right after Mardi Gras. Yeah, you can go back to that.
Okay.
And we talked about you extensively in the opening remarks of the podcast right after.
It was a great costume. Here's the thing. Like, I'm not with Baby Mama. We broke up before COVID, but she did an amazing job getting my daughter's costume together. My daughter wanted to be a wolf.
Uh-huh.
She really wanted to be a wolf. And I've spent, this is the first Mardi Gras I spent with her. I've spent numerous Halloween's with her. And so like, this past Halloween, she wanted to be a bat. And I was like, how can I pair myself with a bat? I don't have time to make a bat costume. So I actually made a belfry. So I actually made like a bell tower belfry.
Bats in the belfry.
Yeah, so bats in the belfry. Nice. And like all the adults got it and they thought it was hilarious. And my daughter was like, I don't like that. I don't know what that is. I don't like your costume.
I don't get the reference.
I don't get it. And so then she goes like, I'm going to be a wolf for Mardi Gras. I'm like, I'll be the boy who cried wolf. She goes like, you have to do your own thing. That's what she said as a five-year-old. Nice. You have to do your own thing. She was pissed that I was going to be the boy who cried wolf.
Well, but you then upstaged her.
We worked together, which is the thing. We ended up working together because I was the little boy who cried wolf, my little bob wig, Little Lord Fauntleroy outfit.
Lord Fauntleroy.
She was in a wagon dressed as a wolf. And as we went through the crowds on Mardi Gras, I was like, everyone run. There's a wolf. There's a wolf. And it's like, I'm serious this time. And then she would just make like howling sounds and she'd get everyone to howl. And by the end of Mardi Gras, she's like, next year for Mardi Gras, I want you to be the boy who wolf cried. That's what she kept calling me. She kept calling me the boy who wolf cried. She goes, I want you to be the boy who wolf cried. So she wants to do it again next Mardi Gras. And then I have to slowly introduce her to the idea that it's gauche to repeat costume 2 years in a row.
Okay, well, you know, you got to bring these kids up, but somebody needs
some culture, they call it.
It's called parenting.
Yeah, it's called parenting, yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, again, we could talk forever, but this has been a great podcast.
It's been. We're there. Reminds me of my worst nightmare.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What's your worst nightmare?
My
Manny?
Worst nightmare is being a Siamese twin, and my twin is gay.
Yeah.
And we share the same asshole.
Oh no!
It's the worst nightmare ever.
Does your twin have a name in the? Do you know what I'm saying? Like he doesn't. It's not like Manny and Sandy.
It's a joke. Yeah, let it go.
These are all jokes. Yeah.
These are all jokes. Let it go.
Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Christ.
Oh my God!
As always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like
off.
To say trouble never ends,
but it continues the struggle. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.